The Phoenix Suns roll over in Game 7, losing by 33 points to the Dallas Mavericks. Plenty to get to as the weeks and months move on and we move on and all of that. But today, what happened? What can it tell us? And why did it happen? Let's go. Locked On Suns.
You are Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
We are back. This is Locked On Phoenix Suns. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network, and I'm your host, Brendan Kleen, a credentialed media member covering the Suns for the past five seasons and a contributor at Suns.com and Dime Magazine. Thank you for making Locked On Suns your first listen today and every day, even as painful as it may be. I do appreciate each and every one of you. As the offseason kicks off, hit subscribe, hit follow wherever you're listening. We're going to be responding and reacting to this game for a while, I think, and then there will be some big questions on the horizon, so do not go anywhere. Hit that subscribe or follow button and come along with us. Today's show, I'm not going to fluff things up. I'm not going to get too deep on any one thing, but what I want to try to basically do here is look at what happened and why. What happened, why, and then what does it tell us? And I won't get too far into the what does it tell us, because I do think that that's what the offseason's for. Those are going to be the questions that we are trying to answer as Suns fans and followers for, I guess, until next October. But let's start here. Today's show, guys, brought to you by Sakara. We'd like to thank Sakara for sponsoring the show, a wellness company anchored in food as medicine on a mission to nourish. Go to sakara.com/lockedon20 or enter lockedon20 for 20% off at checkout. More from them later on. 123-90, that's the score. You know the deal. I want to start here. I think that there's two sides of the coin. I think that there's one, and I think the obvious answer is it's both of these things, but I think it's way more one than the other. But the two general reactions I've been seeing to the Mavs just blasting the Suns off the planet was Luka. This is what this guy is. This is what this guy does. Totally reasonable. 35-10-4 in a closeout game. He's been incredible in these moments for his entire life. There's also the side of the Suns just completely threw up on themselves and botched this. And I think you can probably tell by the tone that I lean more, way more toward the second. And it's actually not as much about what happened tonight as it is. The reason I lean more toward that, it isn't even to take away from what Luka did or what the Mavs did, but more so really to identify that this is a trend that, and you really saw it come out in the post game. This is a trend that's been following the Suns for at least this series, if not longer, is them not being themselves, not showing up in the ways that they had all year. And there's no easy way or one answer for why that happened. You know, if you're being cynical, maybe it's, you know, they just took it for granted or whatever. But I'll get more into that in the next segment. The bottom line is that's what happened tonight, okay? Luka in the third quarter is really when Luka came alive and like put this thing away. He closed the game. He opened it. I mean, he had 8 of his 35 were the first points that Dallas scored. But he didn't blow the top off of this thing. You know, this wasn't a situation where Luka, you know, he didn't do what Tatum did, for instance, right? Where in that game 7, Tatum was a lot of it. You know, he only had 23, but he had 8 assists. He was just making these pull-up threes over the top of the Milwaukee defense. He was creating most of the threes that Grant Williams got were either from Tatum or, in some cases, Smart. Like, that was a situation where it was a superstar versus superstar moment. Giannis, his best, well, it wasn't really his best, was a little bit worse than Tatum's best. You know? That wasn't this game. Obviously, Luka's performance was better than, I guess, Booker would be the person you would lift up in that mano a mano type of way. Clearly, Luka outplayed Booker, who didn't make a field goal until the third quarter, didn't break double-digit scoring until the end of the third quarter. Of course, Luka outplayed him. But this was the Suns falling apart. And it's been the Suns falling apart. Game four in New Orleans was a team that fell apart. Yeah, I would say. The end of game two in Phoenix in the first round was a team falling apart. Games three and, well, really game four in Dallas was the Suns falling apart. Game six in Dallas was definitely the Suns falling apart and not looking like themselves and not having good habits and elite individual play to fall back on. And game seven clearly again was the Suns falling apart. And that's why I lean that direction. It's not to say that Luka wasn't special. I mean, eight quick points, a magical closeout performance. Just when really the Suns didn't have much left, Luka just put the finishing touches on them. Kind of like, what is it, that boxing video game where you have that last hit and the computer, the game basically puts the person's face and then it has like a button to push. And then I don't know what video game that is. That's what it felt like Luka did in that moment after everything else was already pretty much falling to pieces. So that's where I come down in terms of what happened. You had another game where the Suns' offensive execution was not terrible to open. This game was not over after the first quarter. It will maybe look like, oh wow, Dallas already had a double-digit lead. And of course that's not good, especially when the Suns were at home and should have been able to hit the ground running. But it felt like another game where the Suns' offensive execution was there. They were getting good shots, but not making them. They were 1 of 5 from at the rim in the first quarter, and Booker and Bridges combined, who were both getting, again, decent shots that were the product of ball movement and some sets that were working and things like that, the ball was getting to Bridges and Booker in particular, and after that first quarter, they were 1 of 10. But they only had 2 turnovers, and both of them were just Jay Crowder, brain flubs. You had Spencer Dinwiddie coming in and getting 8 points, I believe. It gets cloudy. I believe Dinwiddie's points were at the beginning of the second quarter that started to blow it open. And, you know, that's when the Suns' resolve just wasn't there. So you had Luka scoring in the first combined with the Suns not making the shots that they were generating, combined with Dinwiddie and Brunson at the beginning of the second quarter, and you get to halftime and it's 57-27. So let's talk about why a little bit more here, because I think that's the biggest question. That's the money question. You know what I think happened, which is much more of the Suns beating themselves. The Suns shouldn't have even been in a game seven if they had not beaten themselves, and they did it again tonight. But let's talk about why. First, though, guys, today's show is again brought to you by Sakara. Sakara starts, well, feeling your best starts with what you eat, and Sakara helps you live a healthy, balanced lifestyle and truly enjoy it with delicious, plant-rich, transformational nutrition that builds a foundation for living in your best body. True radiance starts on your plate. Made with high-quality organic ingredients, Sakara's, again, plant-rich transformational nutrition programs expertly designed to deliver real results. Sakara is a wellness company anchored in food as medicine on a mission to nourish your body through the power of plants. They're nutritionally designed, chef-crafted breakfasts, lunches, and dinners are made with powerful plant-rich ingredients helping boost your energy, support your digestion, curb your sugar cravings, and get your skin glowing. Plus, it's all delivered right to your door, ready to eat. Sakara's functional, plant-rich wellness essentials help you create a body you love living in. Look, I will just say, Sakara tapping into plant-based food. I mean, first of all, Chris Paul can speak for it. Second of all, this stuff is getting really good. They're starting to crack the code where you can barely tell, and it's so much healthier for you. Right now, Sakara is offering our listeners 20% off their first order when they go to sakara.com/lockedon20 or enter code lockedon20 at checkout. That's Sakara, sakara.com/lockedon20 to get 20% off your first order. sakara.com/lockedon20. We talked about what happened. Let's talk about why. And this is just my initial... We got to talk to Devin Booker, Chris Paul, Monty Williams, Cam Johnson, and Mikal Bridges. No DeAndre Ayton, which I will get to close the show. DeAndre Ayton played only 17 minutes in this game. There are some folks on the scene who seem to think that they saw DeAndre Ayton refuse to check back in to this game. And we'll talk about all of that. We did not talk to DeAndre Ayton post-game, most likely as a result of some of those things. So let's talk about why the Suns fell apart. If that's the place that we're leaning here. So I think it is a big bummer to say this, but it starts with Chris Paul. I don't see a way that you can talk about this loss without starting with Paul. Okay. So the stat line will not tell you. Just like in game six, Chris Paul's stat line was fine. Didn't really have the turnover problems. You know, obviously the numbers themselves aren't as big. You could obviously look at the fact that the Suns lost and see, okay, well, their second best player only gave them 10-4. That probably had something to do with it. But you wouldn't necessarily see 10-4 from Chris Paul and feel like the Suns lost by 33 or that they were down by 40 plus at points in that third quarter. So Chris Paul maybe isn't the only reason that the Suns lost this game, but I don't see how you could say that he's not the main reason. How you couldn't say that he's not the main reason. He is the main reason, is my point. He apparently, reportedly, his go-to reporter, Mark Spears of Anscape, ESPN, used to be the Undefeated, reported post-game that Chris has a quad injury, left quad injury, and that was affecting him. We also saw him at various points, I appreciate you guys on YouTube dealing with my hair flying around. This fan is on, but Spears reported that the quad injury was affecting him. We saw at points him grabbing what looked to be his ring finger and middle finger on his right hand. Whatever it is, and again, I just hate to use the injuries as an excuse. But whatever it was, Chris Paul was not himself. He was not a guy that was willing to shoot, even if he seemingly was able. I mean, again, this is very different than last year because when Paul had the hand thing or even the shoulder thing in the first round in the finals, Paul was just couldn't shoot. I mean, he couldn't shoot and he wasn't dribbling well. He would just cough up the ball. Neither of those things were happening so consistently this time. So it's just tough to know how much to blame on that. It feels like in games 6 and 7, Chris basically went into I'm not going to hurt the team mode. Okay? Like he didn't turn the ball over, but he also wasn't really trying to do too much. And here's why that's a problem, because the Mavs have, the thing that I think was underestimated about them heading into the playoffs is the amount of wing depth that they have. You know, forward depth to be able to play successful small ball between Finney-Smith, Bullock, Kleba, Dinwiddie, and, you know, obviously Luka, and then even Brunson, who survived well in this series, not only scoring, especially in those second quarters, but being able to just hold up defensively, be able to play an equal, like he played equally physically to what Chris Paul was able to do. And that says a lot. Like, that's right there, you know, 7-8 small ball players that you really trust. I think that was underestimated. And so when you have Chris Paul either, you know, in games 3 and 4, trying to will something into existence, trying to create offense, trying to force the issue and failing, or you have him in protect mode, I'm not going to be the reason we lose mode. Either one of those things, when you have the swarming defense and the game plan that Dallas was able to execute, you can't win. This series needed Chris Paul to be at his best. Any of the X factors that we talked about in this series relied on Chris Paul being really good. DeAndre Ayton attacking the Mavs on switches. Well, who's going to get him the ball? Who's the best at getting him the ball? Who's the best at manufacturing those switches and putting Ayton in position to succeed? Now, I'm not making excuses for Ayton. Again, that's a conversation I'm going to have in a second, but that's Chris Paul. When you talk about Mikal Bridges, who had arguably an even worse series in this series than he had in last year's finals, who is the guy who gets Mikal Bridges great shots? Whether that's on cuts, in transition, in the corner for three, that's Chris Paul. You talk about Jay Crowder coughing up 2 turnovers in this game and being inconsistent from deep. Who gets him his shots? Chris Paul. Like, no matter which way you slice it, and you throw in the fact that Cameron Payne wasn't doing what he needed to do, it's so much of what happens. You at least, I said after game 6 with Aaron Edwards on this show that Chris Paul's game 6 in this series was worse than his game 6 against the Lakers in the first round last year when he still barely had his right arm functional. He was like 4 of 12 from the field in that game, but he was 12 assists and just 1 turnover. He was running the offense. I think the 4 assists to me is where I look in this game, and that explains so much of why the Suns' offense was just in mud. Now, 2 things that I don't think Paul and his performance or his injury or whatever we want to call that quite all the way explains is, one, the mentality and the mindset and the attitude and the intensity. There's no excuse for that stuff falling away. There just isn't. This game, I believe, was the worst home Game 7 loss since, I think it was 1948, back when the teams were all called different things, and it wasn't even the same construction of the league. Okay, so it was a bunch of white dudes who look like your uncle running around playing a version of this game that doesn't even look like basketball. That's how long it's been. There's no excuse for that part. There's also no excuse. The other thing I don't think that Paul's performance quite explains is Booker's performance. He's not absent of blame here. I believe he started 0 of 11 in this game. He again didn't make his first field goal until the third quarter, He didn't crack 10 points until the game was already lost. 10 points, that's something he had in first quarters like every other night during the regular season. That's unacceptable. This is a guy who got MVP votes. This is a guy who took over in that game 6 against the Lakers. I get Anthony Davis wasn't healthy, blah, 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 blah. He has taken over. He has shown himself capable when Chris Paul is hurt, when Chris Paul is less than himself. This is a guy who, when Chris Paul was throwing the ball everywhere, unable to dribble in the finals, went out and put up 40 twice. in the NBA Finals against what I believe is still a much better defense than this Mavs defense is, which is the Milwaukee Bucks defense. I'm not expecting something of Booker that we've never seen before, and I'm not expecting something of Booker that's, in my opinion, unreasonable. And he was not good. So, I mean, that's a little bit of more of what, I guess, than why, but I don't have much more. What does this mean? And again, that'll be the question that takes us through the off season. But I want to talk about DeAndre and what happened. I think that's the place to start. So we'll get there. The outburst, what Monty said post game, what Book said post game, all of it coming up. First, though, guys, today's show brought to you by Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar on the planet. My favorite protein bar on the planet, just placed an order today. Because as I said, look, food in general is outrageous right now. But it feels like protein bars are never on sale anymore. I don't know about you guys. But I go, I'm looking, whether it's just trying to find whatever's on sale at the store just to save some money when I'm out of Built Bars, or it's, I've actually, Built Bar is sold at my local protein nutrition store, and I went there, and they're not even in stock anymore. So place an order at Built.com. Plus, when you actually go to Built.com, you're getting the exclusive limited time offerings. Birthday cake, a Built Bar puff, a Built puff, which is the first ever protein-infused marshmallow. You have cookies and cream, peanut butter brownie, churro, coconut marshmallow, banana cream pie, tons and tons of good stuff that you can only find when you go online. You have to be checking constantly. And again, that birthday cake puff, Built has taken the delicious experience of biting into a fresh slice of birthday cake and enrobed it in 100% white chocolate with sprinkles. But best of all, only 150 calories and 9 grams of sugar, but packed with 16 grams of protein. They do it every time, guys. They make it delicious. Then they make it healthy. It's always both. It's always reliable. Go to Built.com. Get your hands on a limited time offering of that birthday cake puff, or try your favorite again. Try something new. Go back to your old favorite and use the promo code LOCK15 when you do to get 15% off your next order. That's promo code LOCK15 for 15% off at Built.com. All right, so I wanted to close the show with a little bit of what does this mean? Just my initial thoughts here more so than anything else. We had DeAndre Ayton play just 17 minutes. Some point in the third quarter when things really started to get out of control, DeAndre Ayton got benched. I believe it was during a timeout, and Ayton just did not come back into the game. Bismack Biyombo checked in. I don't exactly remember the details because I actually don't think Biyombo came in after a timeout. He came in just as a substitution. I don't know exactly when the fallout or the argument or whatever happened, but Mr. Orange, who we all know who that is, guy who's had season tickets forever, sits actually for the playoffs where they've had us the past 2 years, and media is up at the Tandaway Rum Lounge. And basically, it's behind the Suns bench up in the corner of the suite level, which means, long story short, that's actually where Mr. Orange sits, but he's obviously in the lower bowl, just a few seats, few rows behind the Suns bench itself. So, you know, he has a similar view to what I have, and I know where he sits. So I believe that he would be within vocal distance to be able to hear what happened. And what he said is, DA had words for Monty on that substitution. Monty walked towards him and asked, "What did you say?" Then two coaches stepped in between them. You had a guy named Wes on Twitter saying, "Yep, I read Monty's lips," and he asked him if he wanted to play. Ayton said, "Nope." I would trust that a little bit less. I don't know if that person was in the arena or thought they saw something on the screen. I'm not sure. But bottom line is, Ayton obviously did not come back into the game. And when Monty was asked about it post-game, he very abruptly, sternly said, "That's internal." And that was it. So, I don't know. And then here's what Booker said when asked about he was asked about Ayton not coming back in and sort of was reminded what Monty said, although actually Booker and Paul were both inside of the media room while Monty was giving his press conference, which is a very unusual thing. Most of the time, they're not even ready yet, and if they are, they wait outside the door, but Booker and Paul both were just standing there while we were asking Monty questions. Very strange situation. So he had already heard what Monty said, and here's what Booker said. Quote, his contract situation is between him and the front office. I care about him as a brother, just making sure his mental is right. Whatever happens, happens. Kind of hard to look so far in the future. He also made a point. He said, after he said just making sure his mental is right, he said something along the lines of just making sure he has everything off the court in order or something like that. Again, I don't want to read too much into that or anything else. It's a tough thing to say. But regardless, it's bad. And I think that speaks to me more so than anything else, for just trying to think about what it means or what this can tell us. I mean, I think more than anything else, it just tells us how overloaded and just disoriented this Suns team was with all of this. Mikal Bridges and Cam Johnson, for sure, they were at a loss for words, just like I'm sure the rest of you are. So I don't know. Obviously, the Ayton thing brings up questions about his free agency and, you know, possible trade with being a restricted free agent, sign and trade. I don't know. In a lot of ways, it sort of, this type of loss brings out the worst in people in some cases. And Ayton, fair or not fair, whatever you want to say, there's always been the question with him about engagement, dedication, commitment, that type of thing. Is he somebody in a foxhole guy, so to speak? Is he somebody that when you are suffering this type of defeat is going to be there 100% for you? And I don't think it's unreasonable to, understanding we don't know the full story, and I'm not pretending to, the base facts here, if they're true, and just seeing how frustrated it seemed to make Monty, it brings a lot of that stuff back up into question. And you don't want to judge somebody off of their worst moment. You don't want to judge somebody off of, a bad situation like this and take the collective bedwetting that the Suns just did and place that on Ayton's shoulders by any means and say, wow, he really, he just wasn't committed and this is all such a symptom of Ayton and blah, blah, blah. That's unfair. But It's also fair to question why he would do something like that. And there's going to be big decisions after a loss like this. And, that's a sour taste to leave in the coaching staff's mouth, your teammates' mouths, the front office, the fan base, the community, everybody to see it end like that. But I can just say for sure that Ayton was not the only person who took it poorly. Bridges, Johnson, both of those guys, they were struggling. Booker and Paul, I think they just wanted to get it over with, wanted to not have to talk about it anymore. It's tough. So we'll have more throughout the rest of the week. Obviously, you guys are feeling that as well. But I'll continue to try to make sense of it. We'll talk through all of it. Hopefully, we do get to have a end of season media availability from these guys, which we did not get last year. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. Thank you guys for listening. Thanks for making Locked On Suns your first listen today and every day. Now go make Locked On NBA your second listen to catch up on everything else going on around the league over the weekend.